Mentioned after our ice cream supper at Cooper Town that I'm sure most of you will have something equally as wonderful. That I just got these blank stares back at me. And James did blink. It's like, we're not doing anything. Then I came in, and as Stephen said, had the Krispy Kreme and then these chocolate almonds. And I don't know, I love this stuff. And the Goo Goo, is this too loud? I need to bring it down, sorry. The Goo Goo cluster candy bar there. So kind of a sad commentary on my life that anybody can smoothies and vegetables. You know, it was the sugar-laden stuff that I really need. But I'm glad the kids enjoyed it. The kids, if y'all want some more stuff up here, we'll enjoy that. Great job, Steve. Appreciate that. Well, I've shared with y'all some things in my life that have been kind of tough. And tonight we're going to kind of talk about what to say and not say when people are in these difficult situations. This is a friend of mine named Wayne Cornwell, and he preaches up in Smyrna. Good friend of mine, we were in the same youth group together. Anybody know Wayne or the Cornwell family? Anybody know some of them? Well, Wayne was in the ninth grade, I was a 12th grader, and we went out to speak at one of the retirement centers. So I was on the front row with Wayne's brother. And Wayne, he learned to be a very good public speaker at a very early age, but he's still young, he's a freshman. And so he gets up and says, to the group there that looked kind of like that, said, we want to thank y'all for letting us come out here and speak to y'all here in your last days. When he said that, I thought my head was going to blow off. And me and his brother just started laughing, trying to hold it in. But that's kind of the thing we're going to talk about tonight. Speaking a word that's fitly appropriate. And I've coached a whole lot of different levels. And when I was coaching at my son there, number three, when I was coaching middle school, we went up to Springfield to play in a tournament, got to the finals. And we didn't have a real good team, but we made this nice run at the end. We were real young. And when I say that, I had to start a lot of seventh graders on an eighth grade team. And so we were playing a team that they physically looked like freshmen. And we were so little and scrawny and weren't that good anyway. And so I decided to hold the ball. And if you don't know anything about basketball, that's where you stall and you hold it so those teams can get it. And I don't like doing that. But I don't like losing by 30. So we held the ball. When I mean held the ball, we stood out at midcourt and the clock just ran and they didn't come out and guard us. And their fans weren't real happy. Their coaches weren't real happy. People were hollering a lot of stuff at us, but I'm trying to win the ball game. I'm trying to give my boys the best chance. So at halftime, we were down 8-4. And I said, boys, we're exactly where I want. To be only down 4 at the half, I'm good with that. And I said, we're going to play normal the second half. And people that still talk about that game, they don't remember we played normal the second half and won. The first half, we did hold it. And so I'm going out the door with my wife, and the coach's mom is going out for the other team as I'm going out. And she said, Coach, congratulations, but that just wasn't basketball tonight. I said, ma'am, I know, I hated doing that. Y'all were just so good, I had to. She said, well, that just wasn't basketball. And I said, I know, I hate doing that. It was my only chance. She just kept going. She went, well, that's just not basketball. And I said, well, I have a 3-foot trophy here that says it is. Now, when you're in situations where you're not sure what to say, the best thing is not to say anything. Because I just said, should have said, okay, ma'am. Now, she deserved what I gave her. But now, you know, what does she think of Lipscomb now? The smart aleck coach with a smart mouth from the Christian school, that's what she thinks of when she thinks of Lipscomb. ask them that. And I just should have been polite and nodded and said, y'all got a great team, you've got a great son, a great coach. So that's just kind of what we want to deal with here a little bit tonight. If you haven't been with us, my wife there standing beside me on the right there, on my left, right. If you haven't been a couple nights with us, I lost her a year ago this Friday. This is kind of a weird week. I mean, I'm really, this has been good for me to be out here. I know y'all invited me to come out and help you guys out. It's helped me. It's given me something to really work on a real weird week. I'm not looking forward to Friday. In fact, if y'all want to get together Friday, we can. You know, the fried chicken, somebody mentioned that. It'd be nice. Thank you. God bless you. But one thing that kind of hit me, and I've learned a lot of lessons through Lisa's demise and things that I've learned and been inspired by her. I've also realized there's some things that I say, that we say, that we don't mean to, we don't realize. So that couple there on the right over here, they're from England. Roger there, he died about a half a year before Lisa. And so they're from England, and her nurse came over to see us just as Lisa, they got here right after she died. That she was coming to see Lisa and visit with her, you know, and just spend time with her. She's such a wonderful person. She was flying all the way from England, very costly trip. We were trying to get all these tourist things to take them around in Nashville to see. She said, Mike, I just want to come spend time with Lisa. Do not entertain me. I'm here to spend time with her. And I said, well, that's pretty sweet. Well, then Lisa died. And so we're sitting on our porch, and she's lost her husband, I lost my wife, and I said, how old was Roger? And she said, he was 66. And I said, Lisa was 54. Even if she only lived to 66, I would have 12 more years. Now, I didn't mean it. That was a very insensitive thing to say. It's kind of like, I know you feel sorry for Roger, but what about me? Then, this is why you cannot play the comparison game in your mind during tragedy. She said, how long were you and Lisa married? I said, 36 years. She said, Roger and I were married 20. I wish I'd have had 36. Yeah, okay. You just cannot do that. You can't play that comparison game. And I'm telling you, this is just something I've struggled with. Everybody in here that's over 55, I'm envious of. I'm 62. I'm a little bit older than Lisa. But everybody that makes it past her age, I'm jealous of. And then I'm hearing from you guys the other night stories that were worse than mine. Losing a wife, a daughter, and two grandkids. So you just can't get into that comparison game. But when you're going through these tragedies, it does wear on your brain. And you accidentally sometimes say things that you shouldn't. And then when you're trying to comfort people, you sometimes forget. It's like a word fitly spoken is apples of gold and saving silver. Now, I'm going to get on to all of us about some of the things we say. I want you to understand, we got to cut each other slack. Because it's hard to know what to say. And again, if I don't say this again, sometimes just don't say anything. Just be there. But also, when people are gooberheads, they stick their foot, both feet in their mouth, remember this, they love you. They just don't know yet. And I don't think it's anything wrong with you correcting them. I've had to do that, and I'll share a couple of those with you. Last night, we talked about depression a little bit, and we mentioned that we don't want to say things like, too blessed to be depressed, and think happy thoughts, and just stay busy. Because depression is a chemical imbalance of something that is physically taking place in the head. Okay, and just tell people you don't have enough faith or depression is the devil. And those are just inappropriate things to say. They are scientifically, anatomically, whatever you want to call it, they're wrong. They're incorrect. They're not right. No more than you would say, you know, if you just pray harder, maybe you wouldn't have diabetes. Would you say that to anybody? You have a tumor? Well, where's your faith? You wouldn't do that. And so we have to be careful of that. But people don't know what to do. When my depression hit in 04, I was assistant coach at Lipscomb at the time. Both of my boys were on the team. And I couldn't teach anymore. And the one thing I did do, Lisa kind of made me, because I was suicidal just about. I didn't want to do anything, go anywhere, but she said, Mike, this is Brent's senior year. You're going to regret it if you're not at the game. So I would go and just sit on the bench and just stare out at the court. But I am glad I did go. But anyway, before one of the games, one of the dads come up, and again, he loves me, but he comes up and says, Mike, I'm so sorry about your depression. Our preacher had that. He killed himself. Now, I'm not going to him for counseling. It was just one of those, bless your heart. Are you kidding me? He meant well. It would have been better to say, I'm thinking of you. I'm praying for you. One of my friends, one teaching friends at Lipscomb, her dad, who's a gospel preacher for 40-something years, had back surgery, and they did not know, but they gave him a back medication to help the pain, that one of the side effects was suicidal thoughts. And this incredible godly man took his life. Now, you can debate me theologically on this. I think I can make a good case. Before I went through my depression, before I understood what it was about, if somebody said, where does somebody that's a Christian that kills himself, what's going to happen to him? I said, well, I wouldn't think they'd be going to heaven. I mean, good night, they're a murderer. I'm telling you, I don't feel that way anymore. Because I know this, when I was in my depression, that was not me. And I guarantee you, that wonderful godly preacher, that was not him. He had, in essence, lost his mind. That wasn't him. He would have never done that. He would have never done it. I would have never thought about suicide. It never crossed my mind until I lost my mind. And she told me that at the funeral home, a friend of hers came up and said, we're sorry your dad won't be in heaven. Just the people wake up and eat the dum-dums? What is that? I can get some of the other stuff, like the guy that, you know, told me, you know, our preacher killed himself, sorry it happened to him, you know, hope it didn't happen to you. But man, that one is just, but I have to remember, I mess up too. Back in the 80s, when I first started hearing about this disorder, I did not understand mental disorders. So there's a girl, I was coaching girls basketball at the time, and one of our managers was going through anorexia, and she was very thin. Just really struggling. Well, I loved her, and I wanted her to be healthy, and she's a great kid. And so here's my counseling. Okay, again, you're going to go, bless his heart. So I put her beside me. I said, look at my leg beside her. I said, is my leg fat? Is it big? She said, no. And I said, but look at you. Yours is a lot smaller than mine. You're not... It's not big. I thought it was an eye disorder. That's how idiotic I was. Well, I really made her feel a lot better. Look at my leg compared with yours. You should feel fine because you don't call mine fat. But it was ignorance. And we need to make sure we know what we're saying and talking about before we blurt out these pithy sayings to people. Good night. A word fitly spoken. It's like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Coach Spann, Joy Spann, my best friend in the world, he's the preacher that got shot down in his church got shot up in Antioch. Having a tough time. He's got a bullet in his back. His wife got a femur that was shattered. His son, who was not at church that morning, he had a wreck a few months later, lost his foot. So they're having a tough time. Well, So we're talking about all the things that people sometimes say that are inappropriate in these times of tragedy. And I was telling a few that have been told to me since Lisa passed away that I'll be sharing with you. And he said that when he was a younger teacher, his dad passed away. His dad loved to lead singing. And Joey would, they would have a singing once a month or whatever, and then Joey would extend a little invitation at the end. And a lot of the songs were those that his dad loved to lead. And he had to step out in the foyer sometime. It was just overwhelming him with sorrow. And so he was in an elders meeting later, and one of the elders said, "Joey, I noticed you don't come in because the songs sort of bother you." And he said, "Man, we've all lost fathers. We've got to move on." That's just not really the time to do that. And the thing is, that elder, he meant well. He had lost his dad, and he knew Joey was hurting, but you got to move on. You know something? You do have to move on. You do. But you kind of have to do that at your pace. And it's not the right of someone else to push their time frame into your life. Not at all, I don't think. A group of professional psychologists were having dinner. One of them had a wife who was in latter stages of cancer. And so they met, were sitting down and getting ready to order. And his friend asked, "How's your wife doing?" Let me pause for a second. I know that's a natural question. When somebody is in terminal situations, or like Alzheimer's, it's just tough to answer the question, how are they doing? Or how are you doing? Well, you're not doing good at all. My mom is in Alzheimer's. She doesn't know where she's at. And people ask me, "How's your mom doing?" She doesn't know where. What's going? She doesn't know her name. And it's not like, "Well, it's getting better though." It's not going to get better. So one of them said to the guy whose wife was in the latter stage of cancer, "How's she doing?" And he said, "Well, she's dying." And he said, "Well, we're all dying." Yeah, sure, like we are. That means the best thing to say. Proverbs says it so well, singing cheerful songs to a person with a heavy heart is like taking someone's coat in cold weather. Making these pithy sayings, these flowery Hallmark refrigerator statements, when they're in the middle of the grief, doesn't help. And this book here by Kenneth Hall, it's just outstanding. It's "Don't Sing Songs with a Heavy Heart" based on that verse. And he talks about some things we don't need to say, things we should say. Got to be careful of this one. I've said this one this week to some of you that have come up to me that lost your spouses. But here's the deal. I really don't know how you feel, because your situation is different from mine, mine's different from yours, and you don't know how I feel. You just don't know. Before Lisa, I guess she was about halfway through our trial, and we were trying to get a truck for my son, and Lisa was selling it on Facebook, and she could type, so she was selling on Facebook, but she didn't call the lady. She was doing all the communication via texting and Facebook. And when we went out to see the truck, I told the lady, I said, "I'm sorry my wife didn't call you and talk. She's lost her voice. She has ALS. And she said, "I totally understand." I almost said, "Have you lost someone to ALS also?" I didn't. But she does not totally understand. I know. Here's what she meant. Here's where I got to cut her some slack. She meant, it's okay that your wife didn't call. That's all. That's what she meant. Okay? And since I'm a big boy, I can take it. But you know, people are sensitive. And we just got to be careful because we don't know how they understand. You'll be better. Things will get better. Things will get better. Yeah, you had a training. You'll get better. Well, you don't know that. You don't know that. It was for the best. They were in a lot of pain. It may have been. And if they say that, that's okay. If they say that it's for the best, that's right, but not for you to say that. Well, at least she's not suffering. He's in a better place. For the person that's the one going through the grief, that's okay for them to say. We don't need to say that. We don't need to say they're in a better place. Do not try to get them to where you want them right then. It takes time. We're so impatient on this. And we mean well. Time heals all wounds. Does it really? Does it? Does time heal every single wound? No, it doesn't. It heals some things. Okay? Like, about 6 months after Tennessee's football season, I'm better. I'm okay. Yes, it does heal those kind of wounds. Okay? Maybe somebody made fun of you in high school. You're over it now. But there's some things that time does not heal. It's God's will. How do you know that? Now, theologically, everything that happens is within God's permissive will. But to say it was God's will that my wife got ALS, or for, if someone were to say, Mike, I guess God knew how strong you were to give Lisa ALS. I don't think God gave my wife ALS. I believe Adam and Eve blew it in the Garden of Eden. Don't judge them. We would have too. We'd have done the same thing. James would have been over there shaking the tree, and you know, the wife making a forbidden fruit pie. So, you know, it's up. So we'd have done the same thing. But we messed up, and it cursed this planet, and our bodies suffer physical ailment. We have genetic defects that got passed down after that. It's not God's will. Oh, my goodness. God must have needed her more than us. Someone I love that loves Lisa very much said that one to me about 3 months out. This was someone real close to her and real close to me. Somebody that loves me with all her heart. And I said, no, God does not need anything. I need Lisa, not God. God doesn't need Lisa. I do. The all-sufficient, eternal God needs somebody. Heaven needed another angel. What is God, killing people to recruit? Going against Hell's Angels, man. We got to get a team up here, boys. Let's go. Well, Lisa can fly, man. She can move. Doesn't make a lot of sense. God only takes the good. What's that say about the rest of it? Just unbelievable. I've heard these were said after miscarriages before. You'll get over it. You can have another one. At least you didn't get attached. Not exactly a word fitly spoken. I don't know where this took place. I read this story. Someone told me this story, and they knew it firsthand. If I remembered and knew where it took place, I wouldn't tell you, but it was just a pretty bad one. But a woman, husband and wife that were not Christians, their son went to a church and got involved in the youth group and was baptized. Now, his parents did not go to church. But he did, and they let him go, and they were glad, and they loved that church, and he was converted, and they were fine with that. That was good. Some of the kids, his friends in the youth group, and they meant well, but they went over to visit the mom, and they said, "Excuse me, I need to, let me back up here." The kid was not, I'm thinking about mixing to it, he was not baptized. He got killed when he was 16, he hadn't been baptized. And they went over and said, "We hope you'll get baptized so you won't go to the same place he is." Now, first of all, theologically, you can't convince me that 16-year-old unbaptized kids are automatically going to be lost. I don't know, it's not my call. I know this, they're kids. I know this, we don't think they're old enough to get married. We don't think they're old enough to go to the service. And yet, I'm not saying we're not responsible at 16. I don't know. I don't know the age of accountability. You don't either. But that's not how we comfort people. That's not how we get through to them. So Lisa passes away on Thursday. On Sunday, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to try to go to church. So I'd gotten up real early, and back then I was, I wasn't in great shape, and it's gotten worse since then, and thank you for the donuts. It's the thought that counts, though, thank you. So I went out to job, and I went outside, and I prayed and said, "God, I wish there was a neighbor out here that I could jog with." And just as I got started, one of my neighbors that lived about a mile away, used to go to church with me. We're not buddy friends, but we've known each other, our kids knew each other, and I was glad to see him. And so we're jogging along. He says, "Mike, it just wasn't meant for Lisa to live a long time. You've got to accept it and move on." Now that's 3 days after she had died. Now, I'm a big boy. I did not get mad at him. It was just the old Southern, "Bless your dumb heart. Bless your heart." And that's, he loves me. He doesn't want me to hurt. He wants me to move on and go on with my life. That's just a little early. Now, this is the worst one I've ever heard. But keep in mind that it's from someone that we would call socially awkward. Not slow, not mentally challenged, but just socially awkward. Okay, Stephen, you may not even understand what I'm saying by that. Okay? Yeah, you may not even get that what I mean by that. Okay, so he calls me up. He does not know. I'm not close to him at all. I haven't talked to him in 15 years, and I really like Bible archaeology, and he wanted me to set up a meeting about this big archaeological project. It's really big. And he called me and said, "Mike, blah, 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 blah. Will you set up the meeting? You're the one that knows the guy. Will you do that?" And I said, "David, my wife just died 2 days ago." I said, "I don't care about Bible archaeology right now." He said, "Mike, we need to take advantage of the situation right now, so we need to have this meeting." And am I in a hidden camera somewhere? Is he really doing this? He said, "Mike, I want you to do that." I said, "David, I don't care about that right now." I said, "Call me in 6 months." He said, "But the opportunity may have passed." I said, "David, I'm grieving." And he said, "And the Bible said that King David grieved one day after his son died and washed his face and moved on." And I said, "Well, I'm grieving more than one day, Bubba." I said, "Call me in 6 months." That's their heart. There's a tendency to want to fix things and to overlook feelings. Let me read to you some things that Kenneth Hawk said, and he says it so much better than me, so let me read it verbatim. with the best of intentions, we can add to one's burden by trying to cheer them up with pithy platitudes of sunny phrases, by making people feel that Christians are supposed to be happy all the time, pressures people into a false cheerfulness. We want to make it better. We have that tendency to fix it. We need to resist easy answers and always having to offer solutions. It's often easier to give advice instead of allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable with someone's grief. When you lightly converse with fearful, grieving, suffering persons, they are deeply wounded, you're saying that their pain means nothing to you. When we say, keep an upper lip, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Glossing over the pain can cause more hurt. It's inappropriate cheerfulness. Your foolish chatter tells them you don't get it. They cannot believe you're so callous, immature, insensitive, and rude, even though you mean well, in their greatest hour of need. Instead of appreciating your presence, they can't wait for you to leave so they can find solace from their real friends or even from quiet loneliness. True compassion joins the hurting person. True compassion joins the hurting person and takes on the fear, pain, or worry that they're feeling. Empathetic sympathy is the action of projecting yourself into another situation and feeling the circumstances affecting them. This is true Christian love. This is true Christian love. Here's the best things to say to somebody in grief. I'm sorry for your loss. I wish I had the right words. I don't know how you feel. Listen, I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to help in any way I can. Some of you have already said that to me. I like that. Brought me chocolate, I like that. Chocolate makes a lot of hurt go away, you know. Fried chicken also. I hope you weren't joking about that. You and your loved one will be in my thoughts and prayers. I like people telling me their memories of Lisa. I like to hear those. I called up one lady that was real close to Lisa, and I said, just tell me something that you liked about her. And I was just bawling. She said, you can call me anytime, and I'll tell you something else. Anytime. So tell somebody their favorite memory. Tell them I'm just a phone call away. Give a hug instead of saying something. Or just be there. I think it's good to say, you know, if there's anything I can do for you, but you know what the best thing to do is? Do something for them. Have their yard cut, the house cleaned up, you know, something. There was a lady at our church that she said, Mike, I don't know what you need, but I'm telling you right now, I don't want to just say, what can I do for you? I want you to tell me something right now I can do for you. And I said, well, Lisa keeps getting mail from organizations and publications that don't know she's dead. I said, it's killing me. I said, will you call these places and cancel the subscriptions, cancel, you know, talk to the people. And she's been doing that since last August. Almost all the mail has stopped coming to Lisa now. And that helps. To get stuff that says, Lisa, you could possibly win. Or Lisa, renew your subscription. Those are tough to keep seeing that. So I've given you something right there. Maybe you can't do a whole lot for somebody. You could call those places up and stop it. Because the organizations don't know it. They don't realize it. I've had more than five people, and again, I'm not a year into this yet, talk to me about getting married again. I'm going, you know, I really don't want to be on the dating game. I was at a funeral yesterday, friend of mine, he was an older preacher, a little bit older than me, and his wife passed away. And a guy at the funeral, I mean, I'm going back to sit in my seat after talking to the family, and he grabbed my arm, hey, Mike, you know, blah, blah, blah. He said, have you thought about getting remarried? And I said, well, I'm not a year into this. And he went, oh, I don't mean now.
Here's your sign.
Don't do that to people. Don't talk about remarriage. There are some people who get remarried. That's good. I'm glad. And some people get married earlier than you would think. Well, that's kind of hurtful. That's business. But let them bring that up, not you. Unbelievable. And here's the thing, every one of these people love me. Every one of them love me. So I don't despise them or anything, but pleasant words are a honeycomb sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool keeps silent. You know, James mentioned that this is not about feeling sorry for me. I lost my dad January of 18. Lisa died 6 months later. My brother died of alcoholism 6 months after that, at the age of 55. My mother has Alzheimer's. I know where she's at. So we're not having a lot of fun, but I don't feel sorry for them. You know, I would rather have had Lisa and lose her than to have never had her at all. So if I have to be in this grief the rest of my life, I'll take that over having never known her. Because, you know, when people talk about remarriage, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm still in love with her, Bubba. I'm still in love with her. And now, she's not me. She's flying around having a good time. But I am. And I'll handle all that other stuff when we get over there. Plus, she told me if I got married within a year, she's going to haunt me. So, laying low, baby. She meant it, too. And, she, you know, she said that right in the middle of all this, just her sense of humor and love, just to make us laugh. We laughed a whole lot during our tragedy because there's a lot of crying, a lot more crying than there was laughing. But her spirit certainly did help. A lot. Anyway, we're going to have an invitation song here. Again, I know this hadn't been about becoming a Christian, but we had one come forward for prayers last night. Any of you need to do that? You know, people here that think about being baptized, but whatever, I'll be here again late tonight. If you need to call to me, get my phone number, email, anything I can help you with, let me know. So we'll stand right now and sing and see you later.